This podcast is kindly supported by Resolute Investment Managers, Inc. and 91 Asset Management. Resolute Investment Managers, Inc. is a diversified multi-affiliate asset management platform that partners at more than 30 best-in-class affiliated and independent investment managers. It offers a unique platform that delivers strategic value through the full suite of distribution, operational, and administrative services available to affiliates and partners. 91 Asset Management is a global asset manager with emerging markets roots that brings a different perspective to active and sustainable investing.
There's a lot of, I would say, people and firms in the space who approach things more in terms of scarcity than abundance. And so what I mean by that is I would base my entire success based on recruiting, you know, locating talent, recruiting, and then growing and developing young talent, and then teaching them and then transitioning things to them. But I can tell you, I get asked almost every week by somebody, well, how do you have time to do all that? You know, how could you possibly be mentoring all these people? Why did you do it? Why do you care so much? And I always thought, gosh, like this can't be that unique because it's so abundantly obvious to me why I'm doing this. But I continue to hear that even after doing this for over 30 years.
Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Karina Diamond, who's a wealth management leader with particular experience in growing and building businesses. Late last year, she founded Stella Secunda Partners, a consulting firm that helps financial services locate and retain next generation talent and guide business owners through succession planning. She's a motivational speaker and coach, as well as a founding board member of Diversitas, a national education program at the University of Akron, designed to expand diversity in wealth management. Welcome, Karina. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ethan.
Well, let's start. You have an extensive resume with many chapters, many of them leading back to wealth management. Can you briefly walk us through your path?
Happy to. I would say my path has been one of continuous reinvention and also taking on jobs that other people didn't want. So I spent some years in banking on the trust side. I ran a trust company, and when that bank was being bought, I was able to work some connections I had in public accounting and ended up where I spent most of my career running a wealth management practice for what was the largest accounting firm in Ohio, SS&G, which is now part of BDO, a national firm. Then after about 15 years there, decided to go fee only and started an RIA, joined another RIA. So built that up and then recently sold that and started my consulting practice. So definitely a long and winding road.
And were there any particular surprises there, maybe in terms of going into this area in the first place, or any twists or turns that were unexpected?
I think the biggest thing that has surprised me along the way and has continued to surprise me is that there's a lot of, I would say, people and firms in the space who approach things more in terms of scarcity than abundance. And so what I mean by that is I would base my entire success based on recruiting, you know, locating talent, recruiting, and then growing and developing young talent, and then teaching them and then transitioning things to them. But I can tell you, I get asked almost every week by somebody, well, how do you have time to do all that? You know, how could you possibly be mentoring all these people? Why did you do it? Why do you care so much? And I always thought, gosh, like this can't be that unique because it's so abundantly obvious to me why I'm doing this. But I continue to hear that even after doing this for over 30 years.
And tell me more about that mindset of scarcity versus abundance and maybe translate it into the wealth management business. What does that mean? And how are things evolving there?
I think one of the biggest challenges in the wealth management business right now is really succession and sustainability. So there are some great firms, they're growing inorganically or they're growing organically, which I think is harder. But at the end of the day, you know, who's really going to be around and who's going to really be there in 10 years or even in 5 years? And it comes down to succession and sustainability. And how do you get there? And anybody who works with clients knows that it's one thing to develop a relationship with a client and their family. You get to know them, they love you. But if they only love you, and they're so focused just on you, that is not necessarily a sustainable situation. And so my approach has always been to build a team around me and let the clients know, hey, it's not just me. For me, this is very obvious. But I think a lot of very talented people tend to just have the client focus on them. And I think that that's sort of the scarcity versus abundance concept. I can tell you some years ago when I'd grown my RIA, I then joined a bigger firm and I was able to, outsource and have even more younger talent around me. And I doubled my practice in the first 2 years. That was not luck. That was not coincidence, but it was because of confidence in the delegation. And I think also confidence that I knew I was doing the right thing, that the clients weren't going to abandon me. And I also always thought, you know what? If they like my other person better than me, that's a win because it means that I did my job, they did their job, and I'm going to go find more.
And just drilling into that point, though, I suppose there is the fear that abundance means commoditized, means competed away. And can you lose that tailoring, that kind of the individual touch? How do you get that balance right? Because obviously the robo-advisors on the march seem to have defended ourselves quite well up to now. What's the future?
I think the topic of robo-advisors is one of my very favorites because I've said from the beginning, bring it. Because the one thing I can tell is that as important and as impactful as technology is in terms of scaling, because it's everything really, systems, operations, technology, you've got to have that to scale and really build successful businesses. But the one thing that really has not changed, it looks different, but it hasn't changed, is people needing connections to other people and people wanting communities and people wanting someone to know them and know who they are. And that has not changed and that cannot be commoditized.
And you talked about sustainability and succession, but that's obviously presupposing a certain amount of growth has occurred at the beginning of this to have something to sustain. What would you say would be the formulas for growth? You mentioned delegating being a key to you being able to double your practice. But as you now are in the advisory domain, obviously it's a competitive field, a lot of new wealth being created. What do you think are some of the today's hallmarks for a firm that knows how to grow well?
I think you have to know what is your differentiator and really what makes you special. It doesn't mean you can't do a handful of different things, but typically you can only be good at a handful of different things. But I think it also really comes down to developing your talent and not forgetting that this really is a people business. So, of course, we need sophisticated and competitive investment strategies. We need great operations. We need all these things to have scale of a practice. But the investment in talent development is something that I think still doesn't always get covered enough. And let's face it, we're in a profession that's really straining for young talent. We're straining for succession. Now, I'm speaking at a conference in a couple of weeks to some top producers about succession. And what does it really come down to? And, spoiler alert, if you're going to hear me speak in a few weeks, but a lot of it comes down to effective practice management and bringing in the young talent so that you can leverage yourself, but you can also have the future of your business.
Absolutely. That future proofing with, of course, the children of your clients and that next generation being built in there, as well as perhaps energizing with some intergenerational talent as well. Is that what the RIA of the future looks like? And I'd just like to step back a bit here because we've spoken about transitions, but how about the consolidation wave? We're seeing the roll-up wave. Do you think the boutique will remain challenged or how do you see the landscape evolving?
I think it's an extremely exciting time in the RIA landscape. And I see more and more younger, more ethnically diverse advisors starting their practices. I see lots of movement there. I will say I see more of that than the rise of women. I would say I see more of the rise of, racial, ethnic, cultural groups, individuals getting into the business and attracting more of those clients, which I think is critical. The female side of it, I think, is still challenged a bit. I've been doing this for about 30 years and the number of female advisors has not budged very much, which is a bit shocking, but I do think that it is also an enormous opportunity. So I'm not saying, oh, boo-hoo, we haven't figured it out, right? I'm saying, you know what? This is just continues to be an enormous opportunity. I will say, if you look at people studying, for example, for the CFP exam, there are more women now. There are certainly more racial, ethnic, cultural, diverse people that are studying for it, but we're still in the beginning phases of this transition. But I think in 7 to 10 years, when we're having this conversation again, I'm going to say, hey, remember when we talked about this? Hey, we really made a lot of progress in the last 10 years, a lot of new faces coming in.
And let's talk a bit about that CFP programming, because I know there has been a lot of change to that recently, more focus on some of the behavioral aspect, the idea of a chief behavioral officer or a more human-centered approach to wealth management. Is that something that you've seen in your practice too?
So I think that the emphasis on the psychology and sociology of financial planning is absolutely critical. One of the reasons I've been successful, I was a sociology major undergrad. When I grew up, I read Dr. Spock books and I wanted to be a child psychologist. And I think a lot of people in the financial advisory space have that care for clients. But what I do think also is that there's a diversity of designations as well that's starting to become more well known. So for example, Broadridge has the AIF designation, which is really on the rise. So the accredited investment fiduciary side. And that is also, I think, helping with bringing more talent into the business, because quite frankly, a lot of people do have trouble passing the CFP exam. It's a really rigorous and tough exam. And I know CFP Board is trying to really look at some creative ways to really help people out, you know, maybe have study materials in Spanish, for example, and they're looking at other things. But I do think that people getting into the business, whether it's younger people or career changers, to look at the different designations that are now considered more legitimate, that can really help them to prepare for a career in wealth management.
And let's move now to your work at Stella Secunda. So recently, somewhat recently founded, what is your particular focus there?
So I started Stella Secunda last year with the idea that I would be consulting on succession planning and as well as organic growth strategies. And it's so funny when you start a new business and you think you're going to do one thing and you end up doing something slightly different. I'm doing three main things. One is I'm working at the University of Akron. I'm running the Diversitas program, which is about getting more diversity into wealth management. I'm also consulting in the fintech area on some financial wellness apps. So didn't see that one coming. It's really fascinating. And then I'm also doing a fair amount of public speaking, also on succession.
Well, where do I begin? I mean, so much of that is fascinating to me. Let's start with Diversitas, because an issue very close to my own heart. I know we've seen a lot of statistics around the wealth in the hands of women and how that will look in, say, 10 years' time, and the need to respond there. We've had many guests in this podcast who focus maybe on having a practice for women, and they have very successfully built that. Love to hear what you do at Diversitas and what kind of response you've had.
So we founded Diversitas 8 years ago. Originally, it was specifically to get more women and people of color into financial planning and wealth management at the University of Akron. And a few years later, we had the pandemic hit and we were concerned, you know, how are we going to reach people? We made the brave step to go virtual and national, and suddenly we just exploded. We now actually are affiliated with 24 other colleges and universities across the country. We have a wide variety of corporate sponsors, including Charles Schwab, BNY Mellon, Cetera Capital Group, and others. The FAIR Consortium is one. We just had our annual symposium last week, and we did make a change to the mission, I would say, of Diversitas this year. And I think it's going to be part of an ongoing trend. So the tweak is that Diversitas is now about diversity of people, but it's also diversity of opportunities. So in other words, talent and actual professions. And what I mean by that is there is still a widespread belief that financial planning and wealth management are all about numbers and sales. Some people think, and I've heard this from high school guidance counselors who we do target as well, I've heard them say, wow, we thought you were all, you know, selling penny stocks in a boiler room somewhere, and we thought you were all men. I've heard that even recently. So this year's Diversitas is much more focusing on the many opportunities beyond just being a client advisor, beyond just a number cruncher. So things like fintech, law and compliance, marketing and public relations, all the very, very many areas of fintech. We had a great speaker on cybersecurity, for example, last week. And that's one thing that I think is really going to be a differentiator, because the profession at large is so in need of more people. And if we can get the word out that there are so many ways to be part of us, if you want to help people, that's the bottom line. It's all of what we're doing is it's about helping people, but you don't have to be client facing necessarily to do that. And so that's a big thrust right now of our program.
Well, certainly, I think demystifying the many roles behind the veil of financial services is well overdue. And I think I know I knew nothing about this at university. And it's important to kind of integrate the learning and the practical side around that. And then financial wellness apps, again, completely intriguing to me. And I'd love to know what's out there. Why do we need it? And I suppose, what impact does it have?
I think that the country is probably on the verge of a real retirement income crisis. I've been saying this for several years now, and I would say that financial literacy of the average person, I think we all know this in the business, it still has a long way to go. So some of this can be policy driven. For example, in Ohio now, I believe starting in another year, it will be a mandatory part of a high school curriculum, that every high school student has to have half of a credit of personal finance, or finance 101, but something like that. The challenge that we're seeing here in Ohio is that the teachers themselves may not feel that they are equipped to teach the class. And that's just indicative of very intelligent people who say, hey, I know I'm smart, but I never learned this stuff. It was just never part of my curriculum. Maybe my parents weren't so good at it, but we didn't talk about money as much. So there's this huge multiple forces that are going on in the country of people are inheriting more wealth. Wealth is shifting more to women and people of color. And we need more people in wealth management that look more like the face of our country, which is not all white male.
We're going to take a short break from the program to chat with one of the sponsors of this podcast, Resolute Investment Managers. I sat down with Jay Schilling, Vice President. I asked him, could he describe his platform in three words?
Innovation, scale, and experience. So innovative from a product standpoint, I think we, arguably were one of kind of the first there with ARK Invest in 2016. So extremely creative on being able to create unique products that are more windshield forward facing as opposed to what's worked in the past. Scale is the scale of the Resolute platform, which is now a full-blown multi-affiliate platform, which was born out of American Beacon Advisors, which is an $80 billion platform today to be able to offer investment solutions across multiple vehicles. So we're not the largest, but we're certainly not the smallest to be able to bring scale to our U.S. clients. And then experience, the experience goes back to 1986 when American Beacon Advisors spun out of the Treasury Department of American Airlines. And it's experience for not just from a year's stake, but also for being fiduciaries over the course of that entire life as well.
And now back to the show. And what in terms of, say, functionality? So it's literacy, it's understanding, it's basic things like debt, I suppose, and managing that. Have you found that the response to that is it a learning curve that's steep but short? Do you find that a little goes a long way? Any indication as to how it gets received?
It's been truly fascinating. So when we have our programs, we have an assortment of attendees from career influencers, so students from high school and college, and then industry professionals. And the students, they have fresh minds. They're not tainted by, all of the beliefs of a lifetime. So they come in and are like, hey, this is really cool. I like this. Didn't know there were so many resources, because we really bring a lot of resources in terms of, internships and scholarships and job opportunities to them. I think what's been the most telling to me is that the people who've been in the business for a long time, inevitably, a few people will come up to me, and this happened this year as well, and say, I had no idea that we really needed to make these changes. I had no idea. Hey, we've got some women, we have a person of color, sitting in the office. I had no idea that this industry and this profession had so many needs for greater diversity. And I'll say, well, yeah, didn't you say that you've been having trouble finding someone for this position or not? And they say, well, yeah, but I didn't realize it was such a national phenomenon. I turn it around and I look at it and I say, it's an opportunity. It's a huge opportunity. And what's been striking to me, and One of the best things about being at the University of Akron and working on Diversitas is I've been able to meet so many people nationally that are doing so many things that I think most people don't know about, like the BLX program, which focuses on paid internships for Black and Latinx people, students, career changers studying wealth management, financial planning. Anna Moore's externship program, that's a summer program that can teach students or even young career people just about the nuts and bolts of wealth management, and it could be done remotely. All these different designations, you know, beyond just the ones we always knew about. I'm just getting exposed to it. I'm trying to act as sort of a conduit and a communicator of all of these different resources, jam-packed in a short amount of time, but we're trying to get that word out and helping our profession, but really helping our country.
Let's move on to board roles. So you hold a number of them, and this is, of course, a very interesting portfolio career for people who are maybe moving out of the full-time executive career. What do you seek to bring to the board roles, and what makes a good board director or chair in your view?
So the board world and the role of board members is also evolving really rapidly because of cybersecurity, AI, you know, those kind of things. And I would say most board members are not going to pretend to be experts in those areas because they can't be, but it doesn't mean that you can't be very curious. And I think what is a great board member is someone with really strong powers of observation and communication. I know whatever board I'm on, I always end up being the one that ends up having to explain typically investment concepts or strategies because I've been able to explain it in more simple terms. But I think that's the biggest thing with boards is boards do need certainly diversity of talent, but a focus on people who are strategic, you know, big picture thinkers, people who can communicate. And you know, they always say you've got two ears and one mouth. So what does that mean? Perhaps listening more than you're speaking, which can be a challenge for those of us who've been in sales roles, but really also not being afraid to speak up. I think a lot of people in companies and on boards, you know, sometimes are afraid to ask that question because they don't want to appear ignorant or uninformed. And simple things like that, I think, really add up to being a great board member.
And I suggest that's even something you can start to lay down at Diversitas level, the courage to speak up and to not be necessarily afraid of making an error and realizing that most people are just figuring it out as they go along, no matter what their seniority. So I think that is an important, humbling thing for us all to realize. Let's move now to some personal reflections. So we've talked about your career path. It has involved lots of growth as well as, you know, planning around succession. Have there been any setbacks or challenges in there that maybe you learned lessons from or can share?
Working in banking as I did for over a decade, you know, I saw lots of changes, mergers and acquisitions. And in the last bank I was in, I was unexpectedly cut from my role as the head of the trust company when the bank was being purchased by a larger organization. And the new bank coming in wouldn't even talk to me, wouldn't return my phone calls. It was really kind of shocking, actually. I've never had anything like that happen before. And I think that was one of the best lessons I could have in the importance of reinvention. And, you know, you look at your life and, you know, someone said to me once when I was approaching something that I was unfamiliar with, she said, well, Karina, everything you've done up until this point has prepared you for where you are now. And so at that time, I really took a deep breath. I was not getting any traction interviewing at other banks, just they didn't want me. And I thought back to my contacts, and I had met a partner at a CPA firm when I was at a Cleveland Browns football game and reconnected with this person. And he said, well, gosh, wow, we're looking for someone to kind of be the successor to the gentleman who founded our wealth company. And I thought, gosh, I'm not a CPA and this is a brokerage model. I don't want to sell stuff. But I thought, okay. And quite honestly, didn't have a lot of options at that point. But I saw enough potential and it ended up being the best move I've made in my entire career. So I think the lesson is don't ever hesitate to reassess yourself. You know, what really are your skills? Because you might think it's this, but someone else might find something else really valuable. I think it's super important to nurture your connections. That's one thing that keeps me up at night about young people today is that they grew up in a different world than those of us who are a little older. And they're not as maybe comfortable picking up the phone or having a human connection. But I think those kind of connections really are the reason for my success. So I would say, don't be afraid of reinventing yourself. Welcome it. It's a gift and it could be the best thing that ever happens.
And I know mentorship is now very much part of your daily life. And you said it's, you seem to have capacity to mentor a lot and often. Were you mentored? Did you have a mentor, a sponsor, or any key person that made an impact on your journey?
I can think of a handful of people who were kind enough to give me advice that helped me out at different times. I never had a formal mentoring situation. I think that's a big misconception about mentoring, that it's got to be a very formal situation. I found that there were opportunities to learn and be mentored all around me, but I just had to keep my mouth shut and my eyes open. When I joined the CPA firm and I was in a brokerage environment that I had never been in before, and I would attend a conference and I would hear the top producers speak, and then I would hear other people say, oh, you know, he's so stuck up or he thinks so much of himself. And I'd go up to that person afterwards and say, hey, I'd love to pick your brain. Could I ask you a bunch of questions? And without exception, every one of these people turned out to be a great source of information, generous, helpful, wanting to help. So mentorship can take lots of forms. It is part of my personal mindset. It's just how I think. And I try to bring on people who, even if it's a younger person, who's interested in pulling the next person up. But I also think that there are opportunities everywhere if you just take advantage of it. I've never asked anybody for advice or help where they didn't say yes.
Really good lessons there. And I think also just that point about the idea of a structured relationship being somewhat artificial. And I don't know how we have this mindset that it is something structured, because I think there are mentors anywhere. My last question is around any creed or motto or a piece of advice that defines you and your approach to life.
I think that how you see the world is everything. We're surrounded by a lot of turbulence nationally, internationally, in some of our communities. But I really believe that how you choose to see the world defines what you see. And if you believe in infinite possibilities and abundance the way I do, and that could be in terms of wealth, it could be in terms of opportunities, then you will receive that back. But if you are more fear-based, if you watch too much news, or listen too much news, it's one of my personal tips, turn off the radio or the TV or the internet. But if you surround yourself with an environment and you choose to see opportunity rather than challenges, I have no doubt that you'll be very successful and happy.
Well, Karina, thank you so much. This has been an abundant and happy and fertile conversation. I feel like every strand of conversation has taken us, could flower into a whole podcast in its own right. It's been very broad-based, and thank you for the service you provide to the next generation. I'm going to be downloading some of those wellness apps, because that, of course, has massive leverage. And thank you for coming here to share your insights with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ethan. Thank you so much.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.